You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore.
I'd like to help you, Dr. Lewis. I really, really would, but the din in my head, it's too much and it's no good. I'm standing in a window tunnel, shouting through the wall, and I'd like to give you information. That's my favorite blood makes noise. It's ringing in my ear, blood makes noise. And I can't really hear you in the thickening of fear.
Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Welcome to hour number 3 of the Common Sense Show. I am your host, Dave Hodges, and we're the show that's freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. Our thanks go out to Darren Dammy, our guest in the last hour, formerly of KTAR Radio. Perhaps that'll continue. You heard Darren kind of leave the door open there, and I certainly hope that is the case. Certainly, you'll be hearing from him on this show at a future date. And our thanks also go out to Teresa Martinez, who is gracious enough with her time to come on, and she's the point person, as you heard, for Congressman Paul Gosar's immigration staff, and she talked about a lot of issues related to immigration, and very straightforward, a lot of candor there. And it just goes to show you, you know, you've heard Congressman Gosar on here, you've heard Teresa Martinez now, you've heard Michelle Reagan, the Secretary of State of Arizona. There are good people in government, a lot of good people. It's just sometimes they're outnumbered and sometimes the bad ones have a lot of power. But we need to honor those that do serve the people and take their oath of office very seriously. Well, in this hour, we're going to be joining Paul Preston in just a minute. But before we go there, I just want to remind everybody, this country has never been in a state like this, in my humble opinion. We're already in a civil war ideologically. You have 1% of the wealth controlling 1% of the people controlling 40% of the wealth. That just came out again 3 days ago. That's the stuff that civil war is made of. And I just tell you, please, please, prep, get ready. Food, water, guns, gold, ammo, and medicine. We can help you with the food. Go to numana.com/Hodges. Look at the great product line that's there. Restaurant quality, 25-year shelf life, healthy, no glyphosate, no GMO. That's numana.com/Hodges. And you can use the coupon code HODGES9 to take 5% off. Well, on the Newsmaker line with me, we have Paul Preston. And Paul Preston's of Agenda 21 Radio, also broadcasts on Red State Talk Radio, which we also do. Our home is here on Global Star Radio Network, this great network that has such wonderful programming. But Red State's right there. I mean, they have great programming as well, and you can hear Paul there every morning from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. on the Pacific Coast. And he cuts a lot of stories. I mean, he breaks a lot of them. Paul, welcome to the show. I'm glad you could join us. There's a lot going on in California, my friend.
Yes, there is, and thank you very much for having me on.
Well, Paul, as most of you will know or know already, he is in Northern California, and he's been at the heart of the Calexit, the State of Jefferson movement. California, yes, on and on and on it goes. The battleground that's California. Paul, with so much going on, I'm just going to give this to the guest discretion here. Okay, where would you like to start on this big smorgasbord?
Well, you know, wherever you want to go. I mean, we got so many things going on in California. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, what starts in California ends up in your state too. So just remember that this is a whole setup that's going on right now to make your state, one of the 49 other states out there, look like California. That's kind of the trend, right? At least that's what Jerry Brown and all these other people make you believe, or want to make you believe.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I'll start a movement here in Arizona called Don't Californicate Arizona.
Right.
I don't want Jerry Brown's version of the government. Let's start with an old topic and do a quick and dirty wrap it up. I'm getting information from people in the Oroville Dam area, and we're told now everything's fine, they managed to avert disaster, but I'm hearing there's already problems in the repairs. What do you know?
Well, there are. They spent $500 million, and there's cracks. Now, they say they're hairline cracks, but the problem is, with the type of roller compacted concrete that they have, you know, we don't know really what is going on, because there's no, in that whole thing, a plunge pool, a major portion of that spillway, there's not a lot of rebar in it, and it's roller compacted concrete. Now, I understand the necessity to fix that whole thing. I totally, you know, it's not like I'm, you know, working in a vacuum here. And, of course, it's my safety as well as a million other people downstream that want to be safe. But the reality check is they really did not check, or they did not fix, I qualify that. I'm sure they checked things, but they did not fix really the major problems of the dam. And so, therefore, it's still susceptible to, it's still in failure mode, as most dam experts would tell you. It's still failing. Mm-hmm. Even though they put up $500 million into it, and they have a long ways to go to repair it. The headworks, which is the spillway gates, the gates themselves, are in desperate need of repair. They're in shambles. They're in complete shambles. And if we get a rain incident, when, of course, it's up to the geoengineers out there if they want to make it rain and have this issue, just like we're having with the fires and so on. But it's up to them, basically, to deluge the whole place and cause the water level to go really, really high. And then, of course, be forced to use those spillway gates. And that's the biggest danger, because you've got the devices that hold the whole gate system together, that the metal rebar inside has rotted. It's known to rot. There's huge cracks that are very, very self-evident. They say that they've repaired much of that, and there's really to be no worries and all that. Well, you know, we can't believe or trust these people. Every time they come out in public, and we just had two public meetings. I attended one and watched the other one on Facebook. The real dangers are still there. Nothing's really changed other than they brought in a whole bunch of concrete. And really, the company, Kiewit, who did it, and by the way, it was Kiewit who was the dam operator, the contractor who built the dam up there in Yellowstone, the one that failed. Back in the Teton Dam disaster in 1976, I think it was. It was Kiewit, the same company who did the repair here. Now, they did it very well, and hats off and props to them. There are no injuries. They moved heaven and earth to do what they did. I get it. But according to some of the best people on the planet, in terms of dams, Scott Cahill and Robert B. out of the University of Berkeley, two of the world's noted dam experts, they say the dam is no safer today than it was, last fall or last winter when the rain stopped. So we're in danger, still in danger. I'm not being a fear monger, ladies and gentlemen. This is just being a fact monger. And they didn't fix much other than they're trying to fix the spillway. They don't want to use the emergency spillway and that whole debacle. But the big concern is that their strategy this winter is to keep the water level low, around 700 feet. And at least that's supposed to be, you know, enough that if they have a rapid set of storms come in and it fills up rapidly, they'll be able to control the water in there by the drains that are at the base of the dam, that basically the penstocks that handle the water that goes in through the Hyatt power plant. Well, if we have, and we are noted for having these big deluges here, where they really have rivers that of atmospheric rivers that come in and just dump all over this whole Feather River watershed up here, it is absolutely mind-boggling the amount of water that can rush into that dam and fill it up. So they're going to keep it around 700 feet, and when water has to go out the spillway, it's at 813 feet. Well, it's kind of interesting. We had a very, very small storm that came through here, and within probably about 4 or 5 hours, the water levels are about 699, and I was watching the data coming in over about a four-hour period. The water went up to 702, and I thought to myself, now that's you gain 3 feet in about 4 hours, and if we had, and that was a light rain. Trust me, it was a light rain. So they actually even admitted at the last meeting that they're going to bring it up to around 800 feet and keep it there. And I thought, 800 feet and keep it there? Are you kidding me? So they're going to put us in danger again. That's the way I'm looking at it. And maybe Jerry Brown will get lucky the second time around and have the dam break.
If the dam does break, and this is where I want to put a cap on this and move on to some other pressing issues, but if the dam does break, Paul, what could potentially happen? For people who missed that last year when mm-hmm. we discussed this, tell the listening audience what could happen.
Well, you know, this is the big dirty secret no one wants to have out there, and this is why when we conspiracy theorists start to wonder about things, because known facts, Jerry Brown wants to destroy dams in California. He wants to take dams down and return all the dams to Mother Nature, of course. He thinks that's the big way to do it. He's actually appropriated money for that, for dams up along the Klamath River. He is going to expend money. By the way, these dams are owned by Warren Buffett, by the way. Isn't that interesting? And so he wants to destroy those dams. There's other dams he wants to bring down. And, of course, this is this big fervor that the environmentalists, the extreme environmentalists, want to tear down dams and make it, you know, return back to nature and all this good stuff. That's their theory. And replace all energy needs with renewable clean energy. I can't think of anything more renewable and clean than hydroelectric power, but, you know, they seem to think that having windmills and solar panels is the answer. Of course, that's clearly not the case. None of that really works nearly efficiently as a power plant. So they have neglected over the years servicing these dams all around the state. And part of that is because Jerry Brown has been funneling money away from any of these projects that are supposed to go into repair and replacement and refurbishment, you know, just to kind of take care of the normal aging of these dams. He spent that money on social justice programs such as helping the illegal immigrants. That's where the big money is going. And, of course, we have continued to be taxed. But here's the problem with taking down the dam and why this is strategically, if you're an environmental eco-terrorist, as which Jerry Brown fits into that mold, what you would have done at the time, if the dam had failed, when we were 60 minutes away from failure, literally 60 minutes away from one of the world's largest dams failing, the inundation of that water would have wiped out most of the towns between Oroville and Sacramento, about 72 miles worth of land that would have been laid waste, and the towns and communities would have been washed away, and Sacramento would have been inundated. Now, what that would have meant, that the potential for loss of life would have been about 1 million people in one fell swoop within a matter of 2 or 3 hours. And the other part of that is that we are the richest, one of the richest rice-growing areas of the world right here, right in this area. And it just so happens that the inundation area is that area in which, depending upon the season, we're the second or third largest rice-producing area of the world. It would have been wiped out. And it would have also, this is the cherry on the top for all these people who want to rewild the earth and want to get rid of humans off, you know, population, depopulate everybody, is that there's a company out here called Stanchions. And Stanchions, which literally is less than a half a mile from where I sit, is the single largest producer of queen honeybees for the world, for pollination reasons, of course. And this is not a small thing, because, you know, we're talking about worldwide food production at this point. And the die-off, I've heard estimates of anywhere from 50 to 100 million people would have died off from starvation and famine brought about by this incident. Now if you're one of those people in the United Nations, that's just perfect, isn't it? I mean, that's, you know, it couldn't get any better than that.
I know these facts, but every time I hear them, they're still stunning. And
right.
just the indifference, depraved indifference of Jerry Brown,
right,
that he could even flirt with disaster on this rather than pulling out all the stops to protect the people. And, Paul, it wouldn't have stopped with 1 million people with a dam breaking. Then you got cholera and all the other stuff that follows an event like this.
Secondary diseases, absolutely. Plus, you know, the water, the roadways that would have been shut off. We wouldn't have had any export out of Northern California whatsoever. Roadways would have been devastated, the I-5 corridor, 80 freeway, and so on. No east-west, no north-south. And that would have been a bigger part of it, too. So we wouldn't have been able to export and move things in and out, nothing. The nation would have been infected.
Let's stay with natural disasters for a minute. In addition to the danger that's still there with the Oroville Dam,
mm-hmm.
what about these wildfires? What do you make of them? I mean, there's allegations, HAARP is involved, laser weapons.
Right.
No, it's an act of God. What's going on with these fires?
Well, you know, I've been studying this and watching this. In fact, the night this whole thing started back in October, as I was laying in bed, and my dog started barking like crazy, and I didn't figure out. You know, when you're asleep, you're thinking, great, you know, what's happening? But it was the middle of the night. It's about 1 o'clock, 1:05 or so, and you know, I woke up and I was listening, and the wind was just howling like crazy outside. And I have big redwood trees around my house, and I said, well, that's kind of unusual. And so I went out in the backyard to witness this. Really, it was really, really intense wind. And so I went out there, and I could see that my trees, my redwoods, were blowing to the west. And now that means that that's really odd, because normally the wind would blow from east.
No, the prevailing winds are from the west, not to the west.
Right. Right, and so I'm sitting here watching these trees bend, and I'm like, and they were really bending, and I thought to myself, gee, because my neighbor, I did not want to have those trees topple over on their house, would have devastated. And I'm sitting there thinking, oh my god. But so that was, of course, about 45 minutes later, I get a call from friends that are up there in Mendocino County, you know, which is just right there next to Sonoma in that area, and they have fires. All of a sudden, it just broken out, and then I started getting reports of more fires and more fires and more fires. And then a friend of mine in law enforcement called me about an hour. I'm up because I'm hearing about fires, and a friend of mine from law enforcement called me and saying that there's fires being set along roadways, and then I get the news that there's like 65 fires suddenly started in one area. I think it's a little bit south of Geyserville, which the wind would have been taking all those all the embers and everything into Sonoma, and that's of course what we saw in that fire out there, and it just went through there like crazy. And it just so happened a week before that I was in Santa Rosa giving a speech. I gave a speech on a Saturday, and I had a chance to drive around and look at a lot of different things. And one of the things I noticed was that just about every commercial property and building was empty. It's vacated. The devastation of this business and out of California has just been enormous. But we're talking millions of square feet of really, really nice property vacant, and that was a big thing I noticed. But the other part of the biologist in me, I have never seen Santa Rosa as dried out from a vegetative standpoint than I ever saw on that day. And I immediately knew when I heard that wind was going over to Santa Rosa, I immediately knew what was going to happen with all that shrubbery. Native shrubbery, mostly, and native habitat. That was what I was looking at. And, of course, the fire just erupted. Now, there's a lot of people that speculated about these fires. There's people that have speculated that it was an act of a lot of illegal aliens. There was a couple of illegal aliens. That remember, Santa Rosa, that whole area is sanctuary city and county, and they actually caught one guy who was actually setting fires, and he was an illegal alien. And guess what? He was an illegal alien and came back, well, I don't know, 10 times or something like that. And what was his specialty? Arson. In fact, it was three probation officers that were out looking for him and actually caught him in the act when they found him committing arson. Now, that's just kind of a little bit of the tale. The bigger tale is, was there laser-guided weapons and microwave weapons and so on? And I'm leaning, and again, I'm the guy who was drugged, kicking and screaming into total denial about geoengineering when I first found out about that, into the camp of Dane Wigington, and understanding Dane and I are very close, that geoengineering is absolutely real. And these winds can be guided by HAARP devices in any direction that they want. And then you mix that in with all the nanoparticles through the chemtrailing and the coating on these plants. What you saw with those plants were desiccated plants, at least I did. They were desiccated. Now, that's different than a dead or dying plant or dead plant or a plant in the fall. Now, I understand this is in the fall. But, you know, there's certain plants and certain species that always have that fall look. But these plants look like they were dying plants, and their leaves and everything were very unusual. A lot of the broadleaf ones were, their leaves were burned around the edges, which is very, very odd. And not talking about the typical fall foliage when they drop. So, you know, there was something going on with them, and checking with my sources, that's a type of desiccation that's caused by the aluminum oxides and so on in the soil. The plant gets them, and the plant literally is starting to be choked off from water internally inside the cell tissue. So that's the look that was there. And, of course, it was just a setup. Now, my understanding, and I was traveling down in Southern California on Labor Day and was involved in that 210 fire that happened there, which I think was the precursor, the beta test, for the fires that they have here going on right now, because these fires are very much very, very similar in the nature and by which they have broken out. And several things that have been brought to my attention. When I was up at the Orville Dam checking the water levels, July 7th, the fire broke out, and you can actually see a picture of me standing in front of a fire, and that's I'm actually on the tower up there in above Orville Dam, and the fire, it's called the Wall Fire, broke out, and I took a picture of it. But I found it very unusual, that fire, because I'd heard about three or four other fires that morning. And so I go to the fire thing at Cal Fire, and on that same day, about 12 to 13 fires had broken out all around California all at once. Now, I don't know. Come on, people. This is just like not even rocket science to start thinking that maybe there's a conspiracy going on. The only fire, by the way, of those 12, I think it ended up being 20-some fires, but of all those fires, none of them could be recognized as to what caused them. I don't think they've ever been solved. And then the other fire, the one that they started with, there was a fire, I think it was in Siskiyou County, that was started a couple of weeks before that, and it was started by lightning, and they knew what started that. But these fires on that, and of course, it just so happened that was the day that Jerry Brown goes and addresses the legislature about the cap and trade tax, and he's also saying, as sort of a thing, I'll take away what's called the rural taxes that he foisted upon everybody in rural territories, the fire tax, as they called it. And that was sort of the carrot and stick approach that he used. So there was political motivation for those fires. Now, those fires, we know a lot of fires are set by the fire departments and members of the California Fire, the Cal Fire. Unfortunately, there are arsonists among them, and it's become a disaster industry, Cal Fire. It's very difficult to say that, but you know, I'm not fooled, because I know people in Cal Fire, and one of my sources is in Cal Fire, who talks to me on a regular basis. So listen, guys, you can't hide, and I'm not trying to out you or anything, but come on, let's give it up here. It's wrong to set fires just so you can get overtime. And a lot of that's going on. So what's happening down there in Southern California, I think you still have five fires going on, and they're raging out of control. Some of these fires are going to burn for several more weeks. And in spite of what Jerry Brown said, it's really not that unusual to have fires burning in December down there. It is unusual to have so many so quickly at one time, even in Santa Ana conditions of such magnitude. This is very unusual, and the only way I see it happening is if there's some definite help from HARP and some of the geoengineering business going on. And
have you taken a look at HARP and the technology of these suspected weather weapons? And do you know anything about the technology? Could you speak to that or not?
I'm not too familiar with it, other than there's a lot of laser-guided stuff and microwaves that are used, a lot of aircraft, or they've got drones, apparently, that are capable of using it. What I have been told about is, I have been told from, well, this is the reason why I've gone over on the whole laser side and the whole weather weapons business, is because I did actually talk to a couple of people that, I gotta be careful here, that did give me direct information that they were used. So that is that's something that I think everybody, I would say that if you go to YouTube and you look at a lot of the YouTube that's out there, from what my understanding, and I've been told by people that are very, very knowledgeable here, that's exactly what's been happening. So, and the orchestration of this, just put that aside, Dave. The orchestration of this, where you have Jerry Brown come out and make these statements and proclamations about, you know, get used to it. This is what's going to happen. We're going to be used to these winter fires and inferno. I mean, the orchestration, and even the orchestration in the other fires, you know, it to me is just obvious. It really is. And it should be obvious to anybody. And my feedback from what I'm getting with people is that they're sick and tired of Jerry Brown, and they think that most people have wised up. They don't believe that these fires just happened the way Jerry Brown said they happened. They think there's something man-made, manipulated about it. Now, you can either be in the camp that these fires are deliberately set by people that are doing this, or because it obviously to set off these fires so quickly, so closely to one another, in such timing is really unusual. Or you can be in the other camp that say that there were weather weapons that were used. But one way or another, something happened, and they're now trying to make political hay of the fact that the weather is changing, climate change is real, and all that mantra. So, you know, Cal Fire has grown hugely as a business. I mean, it's a real, you know, disaster capitalistic enterprise. You've got, you know, aircraft all over the place. You got heavy trucks. I mean, you got the manpower. It's like it's a jobs program for the left. Now, listen, it takes a lot of guts to be these guys to do this. But why are we setting fire? And what does it speak about Jerry Brown's mismanagement of assets that would be designed to protect the land, like forest management and management of all the different grasslands and the chaparral? Where's that at? It's been out. He hasn't done anything. And this is the point. He didn't do anything to try and stop what happened in Oroville, and he's not doing anything with the fires. You know, it's like this has been a planned event. You know, I believe it has been. You can say I'm a, you know, the crazy tinfoil hat guy, and I'm proudly wear a tinfoil hat. But there's just something very, very odd and irregular about this. And to me, a lot of the facts point that way. And then when I start getting the information from people that are in technology, it's like, wow.
Well, so let me throw this at you, Paul. I talked to one of my routine sources, and nothing routine about the person, but talked to him regularly. And I asked him, I said, well, tell me about the California deal. And he goes, you have all you need. You already know what this is or should. And I said, what do you mean? And he goes, the document that you were given several years ago called Air Force Owning the Weather 2025. Mm-hmm. He said, right. All the patents are there.
Right. People, Dave, think that we just come out here and we're BSing people about our sources and all that stuff, and we're not. The information's out there, and this is the thing, just connect the dots. And, you want to look up the patents, go right ahead. You want to look up patents for iodine and weather usage, you go right ahead. You want to look up the patents for aluminum oxide, his name is Chang. And Chang, by the way, this guy Chang, his house was two blocks away from my in-law's house down in Santa Ana, California. I can take you to his house, and this guy owns the patents. He owns the patents for aluminum oxide that's sprayed on us every day. He was working for Hughes Aircraft at the time. I drove by this guy's house unknowingly back in the 60s and 70s. And by the time he was patenting these things, it was the 90s. I think the guy still lives there. So you want to check it out. You want to check out the laser technology and where we're at. You want to check out what I am saying about this. Do it. Please do. My job was to find confirming information from people that are deep within, and I got it. And I was really hesitant, as a lot of my listeners know, I was very, very hesitant to say anything about whether it was weather warfare. There were certainly the oddities, all the footprints, everything was there. It was just to me, the science is there, we know that. The patents are there, we know that. The people are there, we know that. And, we have a guy like Jerry Brown who's a zealot, and we have the globalists who want to make this happen and make it be apparent. Because, as you know, the only real climate change that's happening is at their behest through geoengineering. And they're destroying the planet through that. It's not you or I with our little carbon footprints. It's being purposely driven through this process. And, like I said, check it out. You guys get out there. You check it out and do your own research. You'll find I'm right.
Well, Paul, I know you're right too, but I also think we ought to tell the listening audience this. I've mentioned it before, but we probably have most of your intel, and we get this sometimes from our unnamed sources that have to remain anonymous for very good reasons. But that information often is available because 75% of all Intel is called open source, and you can find it on the net if you know where to look.
And what they rely upon is they'll put this information out, and what they rely upon is your inability to connect the dots to the Intel sources. And that's where we come in and do such a masterful, I think, a masterful job. And it's not just us doing this. Now, as you know, Dave, we've got, there are legions of people who have picked up the computers, basically. They're doing the research. And it's really marvelous to see, and especially with the youngers, the millennials, and what they're doing. Man, they're getting some really good stuff. They're connecting the dots to the information that's already there. And that's why I say with this whole fire, but you guys go out and check it out. And you want to check out what's going on with the dam, check it out. And look at what Jerry Brown did. I mean, Jerry Brown hid. When the dam was going on, he was hiding. And that's why I say he hid underneath his desk, you know, deep within the bowels of the state capital of California, where with all the dark vermin, he didn't even come out. And it was observed at one of the meetings that Jerry Brown made a secret meeting visit to the dam, but he's never made a public visit to that dam yet. I mean, one of the world's greatest natural catastrophes nearly happened under his reign, and he has never even had the balls to go out and support the people of Oroville or this community or Northern California. Well, what does that tell you? Doesn't that tell you he's in on the deal, in my opinion? So
let me take a macro view of this, okay? We've got the specter of the dam catastrophe hanging over the heads of people. You've got the northern part of the state in total chaos because of the BLM and the EPA and all their nonsense about destroying rancher and farmer rights. And now you got the wildfires, part one and part two. And you got unhealthy drinking water, illegals just coming by the whatever, the millions to California. Isn't this part of the plan? Out of chaos comes order. Is this what Brown's up to? Is that his MO?
Absolutely. Yeah, they're intent on bringing California back into the realm of Mexico, and hence that into the control of the church and the control of Spain. And that's really what they want. They think that that Mexico was screwed during the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, and that Mexico wants it back. And that's completely false. That's a completely false story. Nothing could be further from the truth. California and the Californios were trying to separate from Mexico long before that treaty and the war between Mexico and the United States. So, and it was the Mexicans, some of the Mexicans and Spaniards and Europeans that were in California. They were the Californios. They wanted their independence from, this is in 1836, from Mexico, the centralized government in Mexico City. And that's what started the Declaration of Independence movement in California. The first Declaration of Independence of California by what were known as the Californios was in 1836, and they were trying to get away from Mexico. Mexico declared their independence from Spain in 1822 and inherited Northern California, then known as Alta California. You see, this is the stuff they don't teach you, and they don't want you to know about. They don't want the truth to come out about how California became its own state, and ultimately became its own nation first, because it was by 1846 that California actually did become a republic for 22 days, a nation on its own, 22 days, and then ultimately became part of the sphere of influence of the United States in about 22 days after that in 1846. That was not a result, necessarily, of the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo. The movement to try and move away from Spain or Mexico was well in play. And this farcical notion that Mexico has any right or any claim to California is garbage, complete garbage. It's a notion that was brought about by Leonid Trotsky, actually. He's the one who started planting this seed in all of northern Mexico and throughout Mexico, making people feel empowered that California and the Southwest should be part of return back. Well, they just want chaos, and they want the state. They want the wealth of the state. And this is an operation designed to do that. Jerry Brown's the titular head of all that process, being the governor for a third and fourth term. And, of course, the shenanigans where he got to be governor for the third and fourth term is legendary. Jerry Brown was the governor from 1976 to 1984 as a young Jerry Brown. No one liked him, but, you know, the powers that be out of San Francisco got him on the heels of Ronald Reagan, and Reagan came in after Edmund G. Brown. his Jerry Brown's dad. And so he served two terms. Everybody hated his guts, as they do now. And then he was kind of took a respite. And then everybody decided in 1990 in California, oh, California's got too many legislators that are sticking around too long. We need term limits. So they ran a proposition, Prop 140, and in that they said, well, assembly members, they're limited to two terms, and senators can only be two terms, and nobody can be, and then you're termed out, and the superintendent of public instruction, he's got two terms, and the governor, he's got two terms, but if you are the governor after November 1990, you can only serve two terms. So what that did is it gave the language that only one person qualified for, and that was Jerry Brown, to serve yet a third and fourth term. We were hoodwinked by a simple statement in the proposition that became law. And so it opened the doors for Jerry Brown to return by 2010 after the chaos had taken place inside the state capitol. You see, this term limit business throws in what's called administrative churn. And what happens is you lose all your institutional memory. And it creates chaos in any kind of system. And that's what happened in the Assembly and the Senate. They didn't know how to legislate anything in California. They forgot everything. And so they were just doing it by, I mean, you had 18-year-olds suggesting legislation that was adopted and signed by the governor at the time. It was just chaos. And so who comes riding in 2010 after Schwarzenegger's debacle as the socialist, big time King Kong socialist, replacing another King Kong socialist, Gray Davis? Jerry Brown, to save the day, because Jerry, he had institutional memory. He knew how it was back in the day, and that's how it was touted. And so Jerry came in as the guy who was the adult in the room. That's what everybody always used to say.
Yeah.
So they'll look at us, the adult in the room. He's turned out to be a totalitarian tyrant. We live in a tyranny. And it's been perfect planning for them as far as... And, of course, in the meantime, they were gerrymandering all the various assembly and Senate districts, so the Democrats won. And then they brought in Charles Munger Jr. to run and honcho the Republican Party and turn it upside down. And now you have an inept, weak, and worthless Republican Party in California. So it's chaos supreme. And it's ripe for something different, obviously. It's chaos. The economy's crazy. More homelessness than I've ever seen, ever. And you go down to Los Angeles, you go down to Oakland, San Francisco, and you got people living all over the place in bushes, people that living in tents underneath freeways. There's thousands of displaced people, and more people being displaced, living in their cars. Silicon Valley's got a huge homeless problem. Down in Orange County, in the Anaheim, Santa Ana River area, and down south, even down more towards the beach, people are living in squalor in tent cities. And this is California. And places in Central California, in some of these towns, it's just abject third world living. No running water, no toilet facility. And all this, of course, is on the heels of all these illegal immigrants that are coming in and getting all the prize anythings that the state has to offer. No longer are California citizens considered to be citizens anymore. They're no longer considered to be citizens.
What are they?
Well, they're not citizens of California, according to Jerry Brown. The new citizens are the immigrants. They get all the favors.
Okay.
If you're a citizen, doesn't matter what color you are, by the way, or ethnicity, if you're a citizen of California, as you would think you would be, you go to the end of the bus, literally, with everything. The illegals get everything right up front. Any kind of support they get. And that has been felt all the way across the board. Now, we're doing this new California to be responsive to that. Is forming a new state of California and doing it in a constitutional fashion. And I'm in contact with 42 counties, actually 45, but not as strong on the other three, but 42 counties of California, and I am getting these heartbreaking stories about what's going on in California. And, of course, what's happened with the taxes and overregulation and intrusion of the government, people have left California, especially the middle class, in droves. Now, we have an impending doom coming up with a huge budget deficit, and the tax revenues are not going to come in from Silicon Valley like they were. And, of course, with the president's, or the new tax breaks, it's really going to hit hard those in Silicon Valley, which has been the main driver of what we've been able to do or have any kind of a semblance of an economy. We're now a mono economy, I would call it, a technology economy. We don't build things. Of course, the farming industry is starting to be hurt, but it is the single largest industry that we have is farming and agriculture. But with these so-called droughts, which have been, why do you have a drought and you're still draining your reservoirs dry to save fish? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. That's what went on for 5 years as part of the drought. All the reservoirs were drained dry so that little tiny fish that aren't even native to the area, the Delta smelt, can be saved. I mean, this whole thing is ridiculous. And, so you think about it, it all starts to add up, and what we have now is this scenario where we're supposed to believe it's been climate change, not man-made business, that's driven us to this point. So, yeah, those are just a few of the problems in California. But what we're trying to do is reverse that with New California. In fact, we're, one of the problems with California, why people in the other movements have been claiming about representation, that there's not representation and all this stuff, Reynolds versus Sims, one man, one vote, is because nobody's really considered ruralness as a factor in California. So what we did is we took a map of California. So where's all the rural areas? Because it actually was prompted by the last election when we looked at it, that California is mostly a red state. It's mostly red by the counties. And, of course, if you take a look at a map of California from a vegetative standpoint, just from the satellite look at it, most of California is rural, and there's really three major city centers, that's Sacramento, San Francisco, and Los Angeles, and so the rest of California is rural. So we said, well, what about if we got representation on par with the city center urban areas, what would that look like as a map? And, of course, what it looks like is you have Northern California, Central California, including the Central Valley, down to Southern California, comprising New California, and you have a swath from Sacramento to San Francisco to the coastal counties down to Los Angeles, and that's what it looks like. And it satisfies that representation business, and it also gives us an opportunity to change everything completely around for California, including a new constitution, which would limit the legislative year cycle. For once every 2 years, a biennial legislature would come into play, like Texas, which was the original legislative year that California had. It was once every 2 years, a legislature would meet, and they would meet for 60 days, and that's it. And, of course, we do that, we're kind of golden again. And, of course, we will be cutting down the number of departments that the state of California has from 343 or something like that, probably down to 70. That's a huge bureaucratic thing. Everything in terms of our employment development will be gone. We will not be having these people suing people and not honoring the corporate bylaws and things like that. That's what's happening out here in California. The Justice Department out here, by Javier Becerra, who himself is being investigated right now by the police department and parts of the FBI because he's related. Remember, Javier Becerra was a member of the House. And being a member of the House, he was involved with, are you ready for this, the Debbie Wasserman Schultz Computergate thing. And he actually hired the Awan brothers. And then in January, he became, this is back in 2004, and his computer was a central depository for all their espionage stuff. And the D.C. police know that. So he's being actively investigated for that right now. And, of course, they're going to get around to him. I guarantee you, Javier, if you're listening, you're going to go down, Betty. It's in the cards for you. I'm sorry, but I'm not even sorry for you, Javier.
No, I'm not either. Paul, let me ask you a question here as we come up to the close of the segment. But all these things coalescing together at the same time, what do you think California is going to look like in 2 years?
I think there's going to be a new state, New California. The timing can't be better. I mean, everything that they're doing plays right into our hands. And CalEx, it's dead. It's a joke. I did an interview with some of the people related to it. It's completely a joke. The other thing, too, is that the other one, if you take a look at CalEx, it's actually four things now. It's called California Constitution Convention, Californians Coalition for Freedom, Yes, California, and CalExit. So there's four entities now, and it's just, it's not anything like anybody thinks. They claim secession, but they have no there. The other movements, the three state movement, is not real either. It's, you know, it's an attempt to actually create three democratic states. So that's not going to work. That'll never pass the House of Representatives. And the only one that's left standing is us. The other movement is about a lawsuit. They don't even want a state. They claim they want a state, but they're out there fundraising with the notion that they're going to get a state, but they're using all the funds for this lawsuit, which is, you know, sort of a bait and switch thing going on. The only viable thing that's out there is New California State, and we're just going nuts. I mean, this thing is really starting to take off and explode. We're putting together a Declaration of Independence. We're actually going to be declaring ourselves independent on January 15th, coming up real quick, and we're going into caucus, and we're going to have delegates come to the final convention for the declaration. Then we're going to start off with a constitutional convention in March, and we're picking up more counties. Right now we've got 15 that have been certified. We'll be by this next Saturday probably upwards of 20, as many as 27 counties certified. So and people are going nuts. They see what we're doing as a legal, lawful, constitutional process. So we're really excited. People are excited because they see hope again, and we're going to give them that. So,
what will the geographic, Paul? Let me ask you what the geographic boundaries will be of this new California.
If you take the northern tip of Orange County, go south to the border, go inland all the way to Nevada and Arizona, up, you know, all the way to the northern border up there. So we have the southern, we will control the southern border. So obvious, we'll go up through the Sierras and across to from Oregon all the way down the coast down to, we actually picked up Sonoma County as a result of the fires. People, that's a really sad story. We had seven people wanting to be involved with that whole committee up there, and when the fires hit, we got down to one. We haven't been able to find the other six. It's just real disturbing. Anyway, so we picked up Sonoma County, and then it goes from to Contra Costa County. We got Santa Clara County came in, which is interesting. We also picked up just recently two large areas of L.A. County. And so as you follow it and see it on the map, if you go to agenda21radio.news, you can see the map there of New California. It's been, people have been hitting on that story. We put it out yesterday, and, man, it's going nuts. But you can see what the map looks like. So you have a coastal strip, basically, that from Sacramento goes to San Francisco, and then it goes down to Los Angeles, and it stops at the Orange County border. So there would be a border there between Orange County, Riverside, San Bernardino, Kern, Los Angeles County. And so we occupy about 85% of the state. And with what we will do to cut taxes, we are going to create a monster economic engine, a monster state with monster opportunities, obviously. This will be the greatest state in the union again, and it will drive the economy of the United States. And culturally, we're going to change the schools completely around. The university system is on notice right now. They're not going to be involved with New California, especially the University of California at Berkeley. They can keep Berkeley. They can keep all those universities, but they will not be a part of New California. So they're going to have their utopia. They want utopia. They want the totalitarian socialist mindset. They can keep it. But Paul, this is going to happen.
I can't wait as this unfolds, because I know how real it is, and the second California will not be very good. It'll be poor. That's another topic for another time. But anyway, time is short, so tell people how they can follow your good work.
Well, the first thing, agenda21radio.news, agenda21radio.news is how the show is on from live or 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific time on Red State Talk Radio. We have about 3 million listeners every day, which is really a wonderful thing. And we welcome anybody's involvement, and you can email me, paul@a21r.com. The other place we really want you to get involved is the newcaliforniastate.com website, newcaliforniastate.com. And we're really, if your listeners want to, they can participate in the declaration process. We have a place there where if you want to give information on what the Declaration of Independence for California should read, You can do that. And if you want to make a statement of grievances against the state of California government, because remember, we are grieving the government. Because really what's happened here, the federal government says in the Constitution, we have to be guaranteed a federal, or excuse me, a Republican form of government. And right now we don't have that. We do not have a two-party system or all the things guaranteed by the Constitution. That's why we're able to do what we're doing constitutionally. And they really can't stop the process, which is interesting.
I agree.
It's going to be a good thing. But
I've been watching this
in that process, and it's going to be wonderful.
Paul, I've been watching this unfold, and this time it's getting done right. No disparagement to anybody in the past. We all have to start somewhere. But it's being done right. We're out of time, my friend, so we will follow this, and we'll have you on again to update it, because we will soon have 51 states. Thanks so much, Paul.
Thank you very much, Dave.
Paul Preston, Agenda 21 Radio. You heard his contact information. Great stuff. Our thanks go out to our guests of this evening. In the first hour, second hour, wow, what great guests we had. Teresa Martinez, front person for immigration for Congressman Paul Gozar. Second hour, Darren Dammy, formerly of KTAR, perhaps continuing, but what a trailblazer Darren's been on the radio. I sit back, I listen to his show, and I go, wow, I didn't know that. Where'd you get that, Darren? But we were blessed by his appearance, and then, of course, Paul Preston doing tremendous work on basically pulling a good portion of California out of the toilet that it presently is in. Well, I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Todd, who runs the place, he's the shopkeeper and keeps me on task here and keeps us on the air with a fine job here at Global Star Radio Network with all the fine programming. And you heard Paul Preston mention Red State Radio. Well, we're on that too. And we're glad to be part of that network that has 3 million listeners and just tremendous. And then all the affiliates, too many to mention, up and down the line, who come in and listen to us on our open feed, like KYAH that I mentioned earlier out of Utah. We're really glad to have you all with us. Next week, we've got some revelations on the black ops side. Shauna Cox and all the things behind the scenes you don't know. So stay tuned. Go out and have a great week, everybody. God bless. We'll see you back here again next week.